Okay, so we're talking about the Export-Import Bank and how it stands as far as the federal government is concerned right now. What are your thoughts on the bank, and why is it important for U.S. companies?
Well, look, the Ex-Im Bank is one of the kind of backbone programs the federal government has to support small business and small business exports, and that's really the issue. We've gotten a lot of, unfortunately, discussions recently about the politics of the bank and what should or could happen in a perfect world, but the reality is the bank is on the ground on a day-to-day basis helping support 17,000 jobs in Ohio that are directly involved with Ex-Im Bank and supporting of export sales overseas. So for us, this is, you know, really a black and white choice. Are you for 17,000 jobs in Ohio, or are you against it? And we as the manufacturing community believe Ex-Im Bank is the right thing to do, and keeping those 17,000 people in Ohio employed is the right thing to do.
What kind of jobs are we talking about, and who would be there to support those jobs if the bank doesn't exist?
So this is everything from large manufacturers to small manufacturers. The bulk of the jobs are actually in the small side, so everything from, you know, suppliers to major kind of integrated global manufacturers to small companies with as few as 50 to 75 people that don't have the ability to penetrate a foreign market, don't have the ability to get access to capital and access to loans, and this gives them that footprint. And really the underlying challenge, and you're getting to one of the key questions here, so we as the United States are one of 61 countries involved in export promotion using groups like the Ex-Im Bank. Not every country calls it the Ex-Im Bank, but every country that we involve with internationally has an Ex-Im Bank of some kind. And really the underlying question for us is, do we want to unilaterally disarm, or do we want to continue to play in this space? And our view is the United States government should not be unilaterally disarming and hurting American manufacturers and their ability to compete internationally. And one, I'll just use one example. South Korea reports our South Korea, their exports, roughly 40% of their exports are directly tied to their version of the Ex-Im Bank. So the South Koreans are playing in this field. When a manufacturer in Ohio tries to sell something into, you name the country, sell something into China, they can go to the Ex-Im Bank and get that support. Their counterpart, their competitor, the South Korean version of that company, is doing the same thing. South Korea, the answer is yes. United States, the answer is, well, we don't know. Right now, the bank is shut down. We think that's a mistake.
You mentioned that this issue has become somewhat of a political football. What do you think brought that on, and how do you get leaders to stop politicizing this and just get back into action and using the bank?
Well, it's not just the bank. Unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff that's gotten politicized in Washington in the last few years. So, I would just say this. You know, the bank for a long time has been a bipartisan effort. And, you know, I've been around long enough that who were conservatives in the early 90s and mid-90s, you know, you think about Jesse Helms and Trent Lott and those types, this used to pass without any controversy. And so the conservatives of the time were in favor of the bank. As recently as 4 or 5 years ago, this was something that passed with bipartisan support. There was no controversy attached to it. This has become another one of these kind of fights where it's, you know, hey, look, you know, this is the wrong thing to do, and it gets very ugly and very political. Our view is, have a political conversation. We're all for it. It's the right thing to do for the country. Have a political conversation about things that don't put 17,000 jobs at risk in Ohio. That's a mistake. Have a political conversation and do it in a way that doesn't threaten 17,000 families in Ohio.
What can Ohio leaders do to help you with this?
Well, the good news is, you know, there's a lot of issues in Washington where it's a really heavy climb. And, you know, there's 435 votes in the House. This is an issue where we think we've got more or less 300 votes for this. So the support is there. The Senate has voted repeatedly on this, and more or less 70 votes are there in the Senate. So you think about issues from regulatory reform to tax reform to trade policy. A lot of issues are very tight issues, are issues that you can't get anywhere near 300 votes for. Ex-Im Bank, again, we think has roughly 300 votes for it. So Ohio members, Ohioans as a whole, help get us to a place where, you know, the underlying reality of the political support, the understanding of the connection Ex-Im Bank has to jobs, that's allowed to move forward. And that's the issue we've got. We've got the votes. We've got votes on both sides of the aisle. We've got votes in both the House and Senate. We just got to shake loose of the logjam.
There are a couple of prominent leaders in Ohio. Jim Jordan comes to mind. Governor Kasich has also said he doesn't want the Export-Import Bank. Those leaders, those more high-profile leaders, when they're outspoken, does that impact economic development in Ohio? Does that make companies think, well, if they're not going to support something like that, maybe we shouldn't be setting up shop there?
Well, it absolutely has. It's already happened. I mean, you know, there's been press reports, and I'm sure you've seen this, where some companies are looking at, do we locate in Ohio or not? And companies are openly saying, because of the issues around Ex-Im Bank, we're not going to create jobs in Ohio. It's a very clear, direct line. So there is an impact, and Ohioans, unfortunately, are feeling it.
And I'm guessing in the end, if the Export-Import Bank were to come back, that there would still be some longstanding consequences for leaders who didn't support it.
Well, I think there's a lot of, again, this is one of those, it's a very kind of easy black and white choice. And business leaders have the ability to look around the world and look around the country and decide where they want to make investments. And they've got, again, a choice as well. The member of Congress is for comprehensive tax reform, is for thoughtful energy policy, is for, you know, kind of thoughtful trade policy. And that creates an environment, not only in the state capital, but at the federal level, where that business says, look, I know I've got a relationship. I know I've got the ability to actually have an impact. And this is a group of people that understands what it takes to create jobs. Ex-Im is one of a lot of issues that go into that factor and go into that decision making. But companies look at it and they say, look, do I want to be in a location where, you know, again, there's a pro-jobs, pro-competitiveness environment or one that's against us?
You know, there's been this sort of rift where people keep crying out against what they think is federal overreach, whether that's federal overreach in education, health insurance, you name it, there's some sort of federal overreach. Does this land in that category for people, and is that the wrong way of looking at it?
Well, we would say, look, there absolutely the federal government has overreached in a whole host of areas. You know, we just got through a pretty tough fight with the Obama administration over the last several weeks on ozone policy. And this is an area where we think the EPA went too far. It could have been a lot worse, but the good news was we were able to kind of rein in the EPA and their overreach a little bit. So overreach is very real. You think about some of the things that's happened in the NLRB. It's been really critical for manufacturers and really hurt manufacturers. So kind of thinking about the kind of overreach in a vacuum, yeah, overreach is a huge issue for manufacturers. You know, we at the federal level are playing on labor policy, tax policy, trade policy, healthcare policy. And you think about healthcare specifically. Healthcare costs continue to rise for manufacturers, rise anywhere between 8 and 12% a year. The underlying challenge manufacturers have is exactly that, healthcare costs. But we're not doing anything in Washington about reining in healthcare costs. So there's a lot going on in Washington that could be really helpful to manufacturers or harmful to manufacturers. Federal government is an important, hopefully, partner in what manufacturers do. And getting to a place where competitiveness is the number one agenda, where job creation is the number one agenda, where job growth is the number one agenda, that's where we're trying to get in Washington. And the overreach has been something that's really harmed us on that front time and again.
Okay, great. That's it for me. Anything else to add?
Appreciate your time today, and thank you for the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with you.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much.